Hello, welcome to Journeys of Maxa podcast. I'm here today with Dr. Jimmy Chung, who's a piano instructor here at Maxa. Welcome to the show, Jimmy.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
Glad to have you here. It's fun to actually get a chance to talk with you in this format. I've watched you on several other podcasts, and now I get my chance to ask you some questions and explore your journey a little bit. You've had quite an international life.
Yes.
Been all over the world, ending up in San Antonio, Texas. I'm not sure when you started out in Hong Kong, if you thought someday I'm going to be in San Antonio, Texas. Was that on your mind?
No, never. I mean, the only thing I knew about San Antonio, I guess, was the basketball team, the Spurs.
Okay, now that's pretty awesome. So you knew about the Spurs back in Hong Kong?
Yes, because one of my best friends, his name is Antonio, ironically, and he's a big fan of the team. So
fantastic. Yeah. Okay, well, that's pretty cool that we have some. We have a street cred as far as basketball goes and all the way in Hong Kong. And actually, I'm also very proud of our music scene here as well, which we're going to get into a little bit later. But you went from Hong Kong, then to London.
Yes.
Then to Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
Then to San Antonio. Yeah. So we're going to get into this journey, but I wanted to kind of outline for everyone a little bit of the overview. Because mm-hmm. it's a pretty awesome journey. So let's go way back in time. Now, you started at what age? What age did you start piano?
So I guess the first time I got a taste of mm-hmm. the instrument could be when I was like 5 years old.
5 years old.
I was playing with the pianos at one of the music stores that's mm-hmm. very close by.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when my parents noticed that, and they decided to start me on a lesson.
Okay, so this is interesting. So there was a store nearby, and do you remember, I mean, this is a long time ago, not everybody remembers when they're five, but do you remember, like, what was it about the piano? I mean, were there other things in the store? Were there drums? Were there trumpets? And you just gravitated towards piano? Or tell me about that. Do you remember, like, what was it about the piano that drew you?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's quite a big store, so there's mm-hmm. also a lot of other instrument as well,
mm-hmm.
but I remember I don't think I've ever touched any instruments but the piano.
Really? Okay.
And I think it is the sound that really draws mm-hmm. me into it, mm-hmm. because to this day I still find, you know, there's unlimited possibility of sound that you can make from the piano
mm-hmm.
and the keyboards, mm-hmm. and also, you know, when you're young, you keep pushing a pedal and you find out, oh, you can actually change a sound,
right,
or like hold
right,
a note. That's
right,
something that's right. really fascinating to me.
Right. So in a way, okay, so this is, again, getting back to our journeys theme here. So here you are at age five, you know, and you go into the store, something draws you, experiment, you probably, you know, play it, and you're like fascinated by the sound. Of course, there's high sounds, there's low
yes.
sounds, you know, and it's also one of the things about, I think what's fun with kids is, of course, it's easier to make a sound on a piano than a trumpet, for example.
Exactly, yeah.
And then you discover the pedal and all that, you know, the world of sound that's in there.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think that your parents, so they saw that you were, you know, obviously interested in, and but not all parents would be like, well, let's put this person in piano. So what do you think, was there something in their background that had to, like, put them in, like, made them respect, I guess, music lessons? Was there something there? You know what I mean? Like, why did they support you, do you think?
Well, so I don't come from a musical family, mm-hmm. but I'm very fortunate to have very supportive parents
okay.
who are also very appreciative mm-hmm. of music in general.
So
my mom used to play a little bit of erhu. It's a Chinese
okay.
strings instrument.
Uh-huh.
And I remember my dad maybe have play the cello at some point
okay.
for a couple months.
Okay.
But they are very supportive of my musical choice.
Yeah.
So that's why when I was doodling at the store, they decided mm-hmm. to start me on lessons.
Okay, that's awesome. So that's kind of cool. They'd had some exposure to music, and then they recognized that in you, and they wanted to stimulate you, and,
yes.
and then they did that. So do you remember, like, your first lessons or your first teacher?
I think so. You know, to be honest, when I started lesson at five, it didn't last long.
Okay.
It was a couple months, and
okay.
then I think I was just uh-huh. maybe too small and mm-hmm. also not focusing enough. So in the mm-hmm. end, I kind of have to stop lesson
gotcha.
For a couple
okay.
while. But again, thanks to my parents,
mm-hmm.
They never gave up on me.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time when I got older, mm-hmm. I got back into lesson again.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember the first teacher, she was young, but she was super patient.
This is the 5-year old.
Yes, yes. Okay, and okay, actually, okay. I went back to the same teacher that as well. So mm-hmm. she was always very patient with me. I was the kind of kid that couldn't really sit still for a period of time. So yes, it was difficult in mm-hmm. the beginning. But mm-hmm. again, I guess from the patience from the teacher mm-hmm. and also the continuous support, like my parents didn't just let me give up and then call it a day. And that mm-hmm. kind of made me eventually stay. And also, as much as I don't like sitting still, I love the piano, I love music. So I guess that's also another reason why I stayed mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. end.
That's really interesting. Okay, so you started at 5. This is good. This is part of what I think is so interesting to talk about, because parents, you know, sometimes see, you'll hit those bumps in the road on the journey, right? Like, oh no, I mean, maybe I need to take a break, even though I'm only a few months into this. Understanding that, well, you can circle back to when you are ready. And first teacher is the most important teacher, and I feel, because usually that experience really sets you up for success. So it's interesting that you did return to the same teacher. Mm-hmm. Patience is a big issue. Yes. Patience is a huge issue. I think that relationship is so critical. Do you remember how long about it was that you took a break? I mean, was it like a year or was it?
Yeah, maybe about a year or two. Yeah. And then I kind of got back when I was around like seven
years old.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, you know, when, you know, looking back in time, that doesn't seem like very long. But, you know, at the moment that your parents are, you know, wondering if you're going to go back into it, that was probably quite a while. Do you remember if they had when you were 5, had they gotten a keyboard for you to practice on in your house?
Yes, actually, I think one of my aunt mm-hmm. has a keyboard that, because she used to play the piano, so mm-hmm. it was like a 61 key, unweighted, Yamaha keyboard.
Got to start with something.
But again, the touch may not be the greatest, but it has, again, a lot of sound possibilities, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. I can play around, I can change it to a violin, mm-hmm. I can change the different sound. It is the sound aspect mm-hmm. that kind of attracts me mm-hmm. into. I'm a very auditory learning person.
Yes, I've discovered that too.
So I'm very sensitive to sound, and that's again what draws my attention mm-hmm. into it.
Mm-hmm. So you had something then to experiment. Do you remember in that break, were you experimenting?
Yeah,
still?
I was still playing during that break. I had a older cousin mm-hmm. who used to play the piano. So mm-hmm. sometimes when we go and visit her, mm-hmm. she has an acoustic piano at home.
Kind of cool.
Yes, I didn't have a lot of experience with acoustic piano back then. So every time when I go there, I would just mm-hmm. keep playing.
Yes.
And then the adults would be like, shh, we're talking. Can you stop playing?
Isn't that great? So yeah, okay. So in a way, like it's like you stopped lessons, but you didn't stop music exploring. Mm-hmm. And so it was just at 5, you know, for where you were. And you know what? Actually, that break probably saved you in a way, because had you been like forced to stay, mm-hmm. it may have been that you would have been, or the teacher had not been patient. Perhaps they would have addressed it. They probably got mad at you for mm-hmm. moving around so much. And in fact, by waiting, giving you some time until you were ready to really, you know, absorb the lessons, you could come back in and you were, you know, ready for that experience, you know. Okay, that's really, really amazing. So now, so you're with this teacher then at 7 or 8. And at what point did you stay with that teacher then for through high school, or did you switch at some point?
So I believe I stayed with that teacher for a couple years until mm-hmm. she has to leave the place that she worked. Mm-hmm. I think because back then she was a college student, I believe. So
what's
she graduated.
Your name, by the way?
I don't know.
We should find out. We should show her this podcast.
Yes.
That would be really cool.
We've lost touch since then. Okay. But I remember. Uh-huh. Yeah, I still remember our lessons. Mm-hmm. So, and then after that, I switched into another teacher.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That was probably when I was like 10 or so. Mm-hmm. And that teacher really pushed me, the second mm-hmm. teacher. Mm-hmm. She is a little bit older, mm-hmm. so I guess she has a lot more experience working with students of a higher level mm-hmm. in particular. Mm-hmm. So she really pushed me. She gave me. That's also the time when I first started participating in like youth competitions and stuff like.
Right,
and
right.
she introduces me to the concept of recitals or playing in the mall. So she always has a lot of activities for her students.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So at that point, so you move, and that's actually a good time, usually between about, you know, 10 to like 14, that range where you sort of start to see people that they either the teacher they're currently with has to sort of change their tactics a bit, or mm-hmm. they need to switch to someone who's a little bit more demanding, because you kind of need that push sometimes at mm-hmm. that age. So you got exposed to recitals, you got exposed to competitions. I believe you told me a story that about that. Is it true that the first competition you were in, you didn't realize you were? It was a competition. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, she, yeah, that, it was that teacher. She, okay. I think she tricked me.
Kinda. She tricked you.
Like, just a, it's just a recital.
Yes, for your own good. So tell. I like that story. So share with us what happened with that story.
So she is the kind of teacher, the second teacher, she's mm-hmm. the kind of teacher that is really good at hyping students up.
Okay.
And hyping the whole events up.
Yeah, okay.
So she's like, oh, you're going to play this piece that's written by, I remember, the K1, actually, the Minuet by Mozart.
Oh.
And she's like, oh, Mozart wrote that when he was five.
Right. Okay.
And, right.
What were you doing at five? Right. Okay.
Yes. So I right. you know, and then I feel very proud that mm-hmm. the fact that I was playing the first mm-hmm. composition by mm-hmm. one of the greatest composers.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I keep mm-hmm. telling my friends, well, hey, yeah. I'm playing this piece and it's uh-huh. really great. And then that competition, it's not a big competition, but mm-hmm. it just happened to be held in one of the largest concert halls in Hong Kong.
Oh, wow.
So, and I have to dress up, and it's the bright stage light.
Yes, very different experience.
Steinway concert grand
oh my
piano. Yes.
Wow.
So, you know, she really hyped that up, uh-huh. and I had a great time mm-hmm. Like performing on stage. And mm-hmm. I think I won third prize or something.
Oh,
I don't remember.
Fantastic. Yeah. That's another interesting tactic. She gets you excited about it. It doesn't really explain what a competition is, mm-hmm. but just puts you in it. Actually, I kind of like that in a way, because then you didn't have preconceived notions, which you wouldn't have accurate preconceived notions anyway, because mm-hmm. you'd never done it before.
Yeah.
So what did that do? Like that experience, was that kind of like intriguing, or was it scary? Was it both? What would you say?
I remember my jacket was bothering me.
Okay.
The first thing, because I'm not used to wearing, you know, bulky jackets and playing at the same time. But other than that, I really enjoyed the experience mm-hmm. because, you know, just even backstage interacting,
right.
I was just playing with other kids.
Didn't
really
music.
Feel like it's you know, very stressful or nervous event.
Yeah.
I remember just playing with friends, and then my name is called, and then mm-hmm. okay, I have to
go out
play.
Stage and play this thing. Okay, that's so interesting. I'm just having this image in my mind. You know, little Jimmy in this bulky jacket. You could say going out this piano that probably weighs like 30 times more than you did. It must have been quite and the silence, I know, like that silence when you sometimes backstage when there's a lot of energy and then you walk out and there's just that, you know, maybe applause, but you know what I'm talking about, that sense of the stage. Amazing. Okay, so you had that experience, and then what's the name of that teacher?
I know her last name is Miss Pang.
Miss Pang. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. The reason I like it if people are comfortable naming a teacher that was positive for them.
Yes, definitely.
Is that, yeah, I think we sometimes, like when we get to, I was guilty of this too, then I completely changed my bios to put all of my teachers in, because when we sometimes don't name those mm-hmm. teachers that were so critical for us in that early stage, we never would have gotten to the quote-unquote big-name teachers without those people. And anyway, I think that's really important. So, okay, so did you stay with this teacher through all of high school, or did you switch eventually?
I actually stayed with her for mm-hmm. a couple years mm-hmm. until I was about 12. So when students are 12, that's usually the time where they enter middle school, or what we call it secondary school in
mm-hmm.
Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Hong Kong, there we have only one music conservatory. It's the Hong Kong Academy for Performing Arts.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a pretty well-known junior music program,
mm-hmm.
so which
mm-hmm.
is similar to the prep department in the States.
Sure. Right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, think of like Juilliard
of
Prep.
Of course, Juilliard Prep, Eastman has one too.
Yeah, or Eastman, yeah. So that is, so this is, so because I think my parents, seeing that I'm starting to get serious into
mm-hmm.
it, and also, you know, parents talk to each other.
Of course.
So
right.
This is a program that I think if you wanted to get into the next level
mm-hmm.
in Hong Kong back
mm-hmm.
then, I'm sure that there's a lot more teachers
now.
Mm-hmm. But back then, when you wanted, if you really want to get into the next level, that
mm-hmm.
this is the program to go to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty competitive, so you have to audition for that.
Right.
And I know for a fact that when based on my age, that was when I was 12,
mm-hmm.
I was considered pretty old
oh, really?
For that
okay.
program, because usually people start when they're like 8 or 9.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. Okay, so you were the old man.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I confirmed this because when I got in that year, I was the oldest student to be accepted.
Amazing. Okay, wow.
Yes, so I went into audition for that, and I think I tried it twice, because the first time they didn't accept me, and then I went back in the next year. Mm-hmm. So remember what I play? I play the Chopin Fantasy Impromptu.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So yeah. I auditioned that. And then the second time, they accepted me.
Okay. Did you do the same audition repertoire the second time?
No, I don't remember what I played the first time. But the first time, I didn't really prepare it very well either. Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I appreciate you telling me that, because this is one of the things that I try to tell people, too. Like, when we read somebody's bio, they usually are not listing. I mean, or this goes for, like, Prokofiev, too, and Rachmaninoff. They don't usually list, like, oh, I didn't make this. This didn't work. And you can get a skewed view of a journey and think that, you know, that, oh, it just worked out every time. And in fact, it doesn't usually work like that. And usually you have to read their biographies, right? Then you see their struggles. You like Beethoven's biographies. He had massive struggles, you know. And in fact, I think it enriches our understanding of someone's music and art making when you understand the struggles. So you probably, you know, it was a little bit of a wake up call, I guess, that first time. Mm-hmm. And then you were like, okay, I'm assuming like you got determined.
Yeah.
Because you wanted to be in this program. And then in that program, did you have one teacher then the whole rest of the time? Okay.
And then,
who was that teacher?
And then I got with her. So her name is Miss Amelia Chan.
Okay.
So this teacher, I actually stayed with her from the age of 12 all the way into high school.
That's a very formative time as a musician.
Yeah, so I spent 6 years with her.
Years. Okay.
And I remember our lesson time is always on a Sunday, 9 a.m.
Okay.
And so I live very far from her studio.
Oh,
so
okay.
Every Sunday, it's an early morning for me where I have to take the subway for an hour.
Wow. Okay, wait. So you get up. What time would you get up to get?
Maybe 7:30. I'm pretty quick.
Okay, so you get up
ready.
In the morning and then you take this long subway ride.
Yeah.
But were your parents with you, or was this by yourself?
Initially, yes. Then after that, my mom was like, "I'm just gonna sleep in, and you're just gonna go by yourself." Yeah.
And then, you'd go then to those lessons, and then so this sounds to me like a very busy teacher, a very very like full studio, if that's what time you're seeing this teacher. I mean, you smile when you're talking about this experience. So what was it that you felt? I mean, this is kind of a big question, but how would you say she helped you, you know, become more true to yourself as a musician, as a pianist?
I think she really changed the way I look at music and my attitude towards it. Like, she's one of the first teachers that really teaches me how to practice, like how to schedule, because I was getting busy at the time, picking up other instruments, playing the double bass.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about double bass too. Yeah,
so she really teaches me how to manage my time, how to practice, and she is also very good at assigning repertoire that I enjoy playing.
Yes.
Now, she does tends to focus more on German kind of Austrian side, but I learned a lot of repertoire during those years with her, also she always holds me accountable.
Okay,
I guess.
Right.
So she is pretty strict in, you know, my playing. So because I used to be if I play all the bright notes accurately, I'm good. But she's not having it.
That's
of
how
course.
You just start. That's when you're ready to get going.
Yeah.
Not
so
when you're done. Yeah.
Really, you know, working on the artistic side of things, and also the program at the Academy for Performing Arts in general is very well rounded as well. So on Saturdays I need to spend the whole day at the Academy where we go to classes on oral skills and musicianship and also choir
fantastic.
As well.
Yes.
So I think the whole education by that point, it's very well rounded. So,
that's awesome. Yeah. So so you're at you're going through this program and it's really developing. You know, one thing I want to touch on there. So this is also a very very critical skill, and it's a life skill, time management.
Yes.
And I think that we often overlook how helpful music teachers can be and working on time management, because, you know, those that really want you to succeed, you've got to somehow work this into all these other things. And typically the students that are really dedicated to music have many other things that they're also wanting to do. And you can do those things if you organize your time well. But, and then also then making the best use of that time through the accountability. That's amazing. Well, let's shift into a little bit of, okay, so at some point you've decided to go into music. Now, at what point did you, on your journey, where you're like, okay, I want to go into music? And were there other things you thought about instead of music as well?
Yeah, I mean, so I always tell people, like, music by that time has been it's actually still a hobby, but a very serious hobby.
Right,
for me.
Okay.
So yes, music has always been in the back of an option, like, for example, when I go to college. But I'm also very interested in media. Mm-hmm. So I always thought that I will become a journalist reporter at some point. So that and as I remember going to all those reporter competitions as well when I was in middle school.
Okay.
So we have to write like scripts and then we have to report it. So that's something that I was actually very passionate about as well.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I chose music because I don't know. I just enjoy the fact of being on stage, sharing music, and then performing, and also the communication aspects.
Yes,
I guess I like communicating, so that has something to do with the whole reporter thing.
Right,
and I think music just breaks down all the barriers, even if we don't speak the same language or coming from a different culture, you can still connect.
Right, right. So you've had this desire to communicate.
Yeah.
And then you found that there was fewer barriers, as you said, in music, and that is one of the magical things about it. It transcends time as well.
You know,
which is another whole fascinating thing to discuss. So you decide you're going to go into music, and you end up in the UK.
Yes.
And how did that come about? Like did you consider other places, or was that the only one? And tell me a little bit about that part.
So back then I was only considering UK because, well, first of all, a lot of the teachers in Hong Kong were actually trained in England.
Okay.
So there's already a culture there, and also the history of Hong Kong always has a very good relationship with Britain, the Great Britain.
Right.
So, and also, during the time, I think they're still doing it now, but the conservatories in the UK, they actually organize auditions in Hong Kong.
Oh, okay.
So they come to you. You don't have to travel or anything. So the audition was held in the Academy for Performing Arts, which is like my second home
by
that time.
Okay.
So, you know, everything just worked out very well. Mm-hmm. I don't have to take time off or travel to anywhere. So, so that's why I only applied to the schools in UK.
Okay, and then when you went there, you decided to stay there for your master's degree as well, right?
Yeah.
So did you study with the same teacher for the bachelor's and master's?
Again, I was with a teacher for 4 years during the undergrads, and then in master's, I was still with that teacher, but the school also allowed studying with another teacher.
Oh,
so I kind of had two teachers at the same time by the time I was in the master's program.
Okay, and I know it's a very, very rigorous program there. And what was it? Again, you're shaping yourself. You're probably learning massive amounts of repertoire, I'm sure, performing all the time and all that. What would you say, like, your? I mean, this is again trying to take 6 years and cram it into one question. But what would you say? How did that shape you? That experience in those 6 years?
I think I would say it's life changing, really, because back before that, I have never lived anywhere.
Well, that is
but Hong Kong.
Right. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, just taking out of the music, just like the life, the changing of space aspect, it's already a lot for an 18-year-old.
Yes.
And of course, I've always speak English, but I've never used it primarily. Mm-hmm. So, and then also there's a lot of like cultural change and things like that.
Right.
So yes, it was definitely a life-changing experience and, and something that if I go back again, I would definitely do it again.
Yeah.
And also I was lucky enough to, the school was in London, so which is one of the
great cities
in the world. One of the greatest cities in the world. So I get to experience so much. Mm-hmm. So many artists will go to perform in London
and
the life there, you know, just is incredible. So
amazing.
Yes, it was life-changing for sure.
Life-changing. And then when it was time to get your DMA, you went to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And had you considered other schools besides Cincinnati or how did you end up there, you know?
Well, so after I finished my master's, I was thinking about what I can do afterwards. So so my plan was actually just to go back to Hong Kong and then start teaching and performing. But back then I had a friend who used to study with the teachers, the same teachers, mm-hmm. when I was at the academy mm-hmm. in Hong Kong. He was a bit older than me, mm-hmm. but he went to CCM, the Cincinnati right, College yes, Conservatory yeah. Music, and he told me about the DMA program mm-hmm. in the States. Now, I've never been to the States before right. at that time. Yeah. But then I decided to audition for CCM mm-hmm. just so I only applied to one school because I wasn't sure if I wanted to continue. So I
right.
kind of just want to put in the application mm-hmm. and see how things goes. But they ended up accepting me mm-hmm. and giving me the teaching assistantship.
Fantastic.
So,
right.
yeah, so I decided to go there.
Okay. And before I forgot to ask you again, because I like to name drop teachers. Sure. So who did you study with in London?
In London, yes. Yeah. So I was first with Gordon Fergus Thompson. Mm-hmm. He is a big artist on Debussy and Scrammy. I think he actually recorded the entire Debussy piano
really?
Works.
Wow.
And it was
amazing.
Released by Decca,
okay.
actually.
Yeah.
So, and then when I was in Masters, I mm-hmm. also worked with Leon McCauley. Mm-hmm. He actually he's a British pianist, but mm-hmm. he actually went to school in the States. I think
okay.
he went to Curtis.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a little bit of, I don't know
a little
if
bit
it's,
States
yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. So these are the two teachers.
Okay.
That
okay. No, I just,
yeah.
I'm a real teacher. I just think teachers are unsung heroes a lot.
Of course,
and
yeah.
You know. Okay, so then you came to Cincinnati.
Uh-huh.
And who did you work with in Cincinnati?
So in the Cincinnati, I worked with the great James Tocco.
Of course.
Yes.
I knew that. I was what I wanted you to name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I'm still proud to call myself one of his last students
yes,
because
yes.
after that, he
mm-hmm.
retired
yeah.
during my DMA
mm-hmm,
program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's now that's something. Yeah, he's a legend,
yes.
And it's, you know, it's amazing what body of knowledge these, you know, legendary teachers hold. Because I can get into that some other time a little bit more deeply from my own heritage, I suppose. But it is something to really be honored, to be proud of.
Yes.
Really, truly, truly,
mm-hmm.
it is. And so. What was it like to be in the DMA program? So you're new to America.
Mm-hmm.
We speak English here, but not quite the same.
I had to change a few words here and
yeah.
there.
I have to say, you showed us your London accent once, and I was very I was like, wow, that's really you really can do both, you know.
Yeah.
But probably a little bit of culture shock. I mean, mm-hmm. What was it like then to go to the conservatory? And then you were there for 3 years, I think. Is that right? Or
3 years for DMA, but then I stayed for NAD as
well.
Oh,
okay. That's
and
right.
And that
okay.
was all because of COVID. So
of course.
It was a weird time when I was doing the
yes,
DMA.
Yes, that's true. Right.
So I felt
right.
like, because during the COVID, we didn't have class. So
mm-hmm.
I wanted to take mm-hmm. a few, maybe 1 or 2 years
mm-hmm.
more of piano lessons
right.
before I actually go out into the world. That's
right.
why. And they very graciously allowed me mm-hmm. to stay for
mm-hmm.
the AD program
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, amazing journey. And of course, you're still journeying, right? And you're performing a lot now. Let's switch gears a little bit, and we're going to talk a little bit about your current work and what you're practicing these days.
Yes.
I know I've really enjoyed in our professional development sessions, you performed quite a bit, and it was always amazing. You've got a great sense of color. I just love your sense of color. And and of course, when you're talking about your fascination with sound,
yes,
I was like, well, you know, that explains why you sound so good. I mean, it's and I don't mean that like you sound good. I mean, like truly the layering and the colors, it's just absolutely gorgeous in your approach. So what are you able to learn new repertoire these days?
Yes, yes.
Okay, it's kind of harder. I think some uh-huh. people don't realize it's harder to when you start, you know, getting out into the quote unquote real world.
Yeah, that's what
sometimes.
My teachers
yeah.
always
right.
tell me when
right.
I was in school. But I didn't
yeah.
understand that back then. I was like,
right.
I have plenty of I only need to go to one class and then I have plenty of time to practice. What are you talking
right,
about?
Right. It's funny. Yeah, my teachers told me that too. And
yeah.
I'm glad they, you know, I mean, because it can feel like drinking from a fire hose getting through all that repertoire.
Yeah.
But then very grateful once I got out. But so you are able to learn some new things. So
mm-hmm.
what are you working on these days?
So I'm still keeping the older program because
mm-hmm.
I have some recitals coming
yeah.
up.
Mm-hmm.
So the Chopin Rondo.
Yes, which is
and
such
then,
a great piece. I love it.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm playing the Granados
yes.
Valse.
Great, great.
And
yes.
Obviously, so I'm also learning a lot of repertoire because I'm in a piano duet with my
of
wife.
Course, yes,
so
yes,
dual orchid.
Course, yes.
So
yes.
dual orchid, we're always trying to find
mm-hmm.
some obscure
things. Isn't that fun?
To play fun or some fun arrangements.
So you've got a duo orchid, and we'll be having your wife on the podcast as well. And maybe we should have you both together. We can talk even more about duo orchid, of course, at some point, because that's really, really a whole other topic. So you're keeping up the that is actually, I think, important for people to understand how much mileage you can get out of the repertoire you learn. If it's high quality repertoire in high school and college, it's highly valuable. So to all those out there that are working really hard and cramming music down your, it's going to be, you're going to be very grateful for that. You know, it is hard to learn new things, mostly because of time. But and you mentioned some recitals coming up. Do you have any, are there any pieces that you've like dreamed of playing that you still haven't gotten to yet? Like, what's on your dream list of like, oh, I'd love to play this someday?
Yes. Well, actually, there's actually a lot.
I would imagine. But
I would like to play more concertos, in particular with orchestras.
Of course, that does make it a lot better.
Yes, and I think partly because I mean I really enjoy symphonic music.
Yes,
I play an orchestral instrument.
Yes,
as well. And also, you know, all the great, like for example, I've done the Tchaikovsky piano concerto, but never with the orchestra. Oh, so well, if any orchestra wants to hit me up.
Yeah, definitely. Well, this is a good thing to mention because, you know, we have some actually some wonderful orchestras in this area. And, you know, featuring local artists is something that I know they would love to do. So, but I'm curious. So give me like your top three concertos you have not yet learned that you would like to learn.
Rack 3.
I knew it. I should have put that in an envelope. And because I could sense it was going to, you were going to say Rock 3.
Okay. Yeah, because I play Rack 2, but not
which is a great, which is amazing. But Rock 3 is like, totally understand. Okay, Rock 3. Okay.
And I think the Beethoven 4, that's something that I really want to play. Again, I play some other Beethoven concerto, but never 4. I guess I was a little intimidated by it almost. But certainly a really, really good piece.
It's so funny. They're so different, the Rock 3rd and the Beethoven. And you seem a little more like, and I understand why, you're a little more trepidatious, if that's a word, about the rock, the Beethoven, because it's so precious in some ways, you know, in a sense, right? And but okay, so do you have one more? I mean, I know you've probably dabbled in other concertos you want to play. So one more that you that's on your list.
You mean the concertos I've never played before?
Well, either never played or just something you're kind of dying to play. Yeah. That's why so our orchestra people out there can be like, well, guess what? That sounds cool. Let's get Jimmy to play.
Now, this one, they're probably not going to be very happy about that.
Okay, well, let's hear it.
But it's a Chopin first concerto.
Oh, okay. But it's such a great, I understand. So for those that are not aware, Chopin was very kind to us pianists.
Yes.
Did not give a lot to the orchestra, but they're just fabulous pieces. I mean, you know, and audiences do love them, so that's a big thing. Well, that's really thrilling. I didn't get to ask you about bass. Well, let's talk about a little bit of that
before we close. Yeah.
So how did you get started with the stand-up bass, and where are you still playing now? I guess are the two questions.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not playing it now. But it was again. So when we're going into secondary schools in Hong Kong, the school kind of requires everybody to play an instrument, but the piano doesn't count.
Oh, what?
Because they kind of almost like they expect you to play the piano.
Okay, sure.
So I've always wanted to learn a string instrument. I tried violin before I just got violin from my friend. I tried to play it.
Right.
I always find it to be really difficult to even make a sound.
Sure.
And also by the time I was pretty tall when I was 12.
Right,
I was like, let's try the bass. And it was fun because, again, it's not a lot. I mean, I guess nowadays a lot more people play the bass now, but back then it wasn't a very popular instrument in Hong Kong. But I learned a lot, really, because coming from a pianist side, I never have to worry about intonation or like vibrato. So that's all very foreign concept to me. And the bass teacher I had was fantastic. I started in a group class.
Okay.
So you can imagine like 5 or 6 basses playing beginner repertoire at the same time.
But I'm imagining a bunch of tortoises trying to make music together. Okay.
But then also because of the bass, I get to play a lot of orchestra repertoire.
Yes.
Bass is because they're rare in Hong Kong, are very busy.
Oh, so you get switched along to
I play in regular, just Western orchestra, string orchestra need us, symphonic bands need us, even the Chinese orchestra wants us.
Okay, yeah. So you got a lot of exposure. That's one thing. I think it's for pianists in particular. You know, doing voice or strings is so amazingly helpful for those very those reasons you get, because the piano is, we create a lot of illusions on the piano, and if you know what you're creating an illusion of,
yes,
you're gonna do a much better job. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I just wanted to touch on that because I didn't even know that you did that. You mentioned that a few months ago, and I was like, well, that's kind of a cool thing. So thank you so much for this talk. It's been so much fun to talk with you, and thank you for joining us on our talk about Jimmy's journey, and we wish you a great time on your journey as well. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.